Welcome to Federal Insights Cyber Workforce Training, sponsored by Battelle. Now, here's your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to Insight of the Month. I'm Jason Miller, your host for this week. Our guest today is Laura Bate, a senior program associate with the Cybersecurity Initiative at New America. Laura, let's just start at the beginning with the state of federal cybersecurity, the workforce specifically around the government. The agencies have struggled, as in I think most organizations have struggled, around hiring enough qualified people. From your experience or the research you guys are doing at New America, what is the state of federal cybersecurity workforce for the federal government?
Right. I mean, you hit the nail on the head that we're short on people. The spread on that is not even across the agencies and not across the departments. There are certain agencies that are hit harder. There are certain, for example, NSA, the work they're doing is interesting. They have a different hiring environment than, for example, OPM or the post office, not to pick on anyone particular. So yes, there are shortages, but distributed across the organizations.
And do you get a sense when you talk about it's different for each agency? As you said, NSA is a great example. They have special authorities. They have a great mission. They do cool things. Maybe that's a little easier to recruit. But if you look at somebody, and let's not even pick on some of the harder ones, but take someone like HHS, where there's a lot in the medical world, where medical cybersecurity is an emerging concept where maybe there's not a lot of experience. Do they have a different struggle than, let's say, someone at the Treasury Department, which is dealing with financial crimes that's become very cyber? Is there a difference there, too, in terms of how they can hire people or the people they have to choose from?
Oh, absolutely. When you start getting into some of that sector-specific work, you really do see differences in how people are being trained, because the data safety requirements are different in different fields, because the contextual training is different. For example, someone with a computer science degree isn't necessarily going to be equally well-versed in finance as they would be in another discipline, in healthcare, for example. HIPAA regulations are quite different than what you'd see in different fields. So the experience level can really vary across those fields. And to add on to that, we're thinking about the federal level, but if you take that down to the state, local, territorial, tribal level, you really start to run into some hiring issues.
And I know that it's kind of a downhill move where if you would do a pyramid, maybe the private sector's at the top just because they can pay more at the very least. And then you probably have the federal because of the work they do. And then it goes down and down and down. Is things getting worse, things getting better? Do you get a sense of what the environment is? Because we've been talking a lot about cybersecurity workforce training, it feels like, for at least the last decade.
Yeah, absolutely. Are things getting worse or better is hard to say. I think that people are becoming significantly more aware of it with some of the more high-profile breaches. I think also when you start talking about what encourages retention or what attracts people to jobs, it's more than just pay. And to a certain extent, I find that encouraging. I think that, for example, obviously the amount of total money you can pay is huge at attracting people to a particular job, but also education. Educational options are really big. Mission is a big one, although I would say that the federal government doesn't have a monopoly on good mission. But they do have a great opportunity to train people. And so I think that has great potential for them to improve.
Have you gotten a sense of whether the federal government's getting better at bringing in cybersecurity workforce? I can remember back in the mid-2000s, the Homeland Security Department would just get railed upon by the House Homeland Security Committee. And I will fully admit that this was a Republican administration with a Democratic-controlled Congress, so that played into it a little bit. But you don't hear that so much anymore from an agency like DHS, that they're just getting pounded for not having a qualified workforce. Things seem to have changed, but is that just the outside looking in, or is that actually the inside also looking out?
That is a really good question. Without being boots on the ground in each one of those agencies, it's hard for me to say. My sense is that things are improving slowly, but when you consider it as a percentage of open jobs, the numbers don't see some of that improvement. So in absolute terms, you are hiring more people on, but there are now more open jobs.
And I think that's the key. The more open jobs, the more complicated jobs. And you hear people like Alan Paller from the SANS Institute talk over the time, you know, we need soft skills versus hard skills, and we need different skills to come in. And too many people have these soft skills. They're good at writing reports, but do they really understand what's going on the network? Do you also see a difference there between hard and soft skills?
Yeah, that's one of the big things that we start hearing from people when they talk about hiring a new grad out of a computer science program at any university. they may have the technical skills to understand the baseline, but they may not have either on one track the technical skills, the hard skills to actually implement the tools that that organization is using. The flip side of that is they may not have the sort of interpersonal experience to deal with the customer, whether that customer is within government or whether it's a contractor outside of government. So I think that that does cut both ways. You have people with those soft skills, but you also have people who don't have those soft skills.
Let's take it one level down. We talk a lot about who's in the cyber workforce. There's also fewer minorities. There's fewer women who are getting, there's plenty of opportunities, but they're not going into those areas, or they're not being trained, or they're not being educated in terms of therefore being hired. What are you seeing from the minorities and women's side of this discussion?
You're starting to see data that says that students are tracking into STEM fields or not into STEM fields in middle school. So when we start looking at the pipeline for women, for people of color, you're going way back into like they're about 10, 11, 12. And you start seeing the games that students play with differentiate them at that level. So when you get down the pipeline to when people are in their 20s and 30s, you really do have big issues. And this is an issue on two levels. One is just purely numbers. I think if you have, you're going to have a narrow pipeline if you have a narrow demographic. If you're only pulling from white men out of computer science schools, you're automatically cutting your numbers down really significantly. So you're never really going to reach the levels you need to fill the jobs that are open. But even less specific than demographics is the importance of having a variety of views. I think that research shows that different experiences, different work experiences, different personal histories really make more innovative teams. They make better products. And when your product is national security, that kind of innovative thinking is huge. You want to have the best team available, and that comes from diversity.
It's interesting you talk about going back to middle school, and you see that with kids who say, well, I don't like math. I'm not good at math. And that's really the first step toward, well, okay, what do they want to be when they grow up? And it's one thing when, if you remember when you were 10 or 11, you never say, well, at 10, I want to be this. And then you end up being whatever this is. But at the same time, I still think you set the tone. And I talked to a vendor just recently who said they're doing something with the Girl Scouts of America. And they're really doing a huge push to get badges, cybersecurity badges. You have kind of like typical hygiene badges. So like, don't click on links that you don't know where they're coming from. Then you have more what they call it, I may mess this up, but systems engineering type of things, or network engineering. And are you starting to see some of that happen, whether it's with boys, girls, minorities, you know, non-minorities, doesn't matter. Are you starting to see more of that educational or reaching out to that 10, 11, 12 year old?
Yeah, I think you are. I think you're seeing more of that reaching out, and I think you're seeing more of it become effective. For example, the Air Force Association has a program reaching out to students. You compile your cybersecurity team. They compete in a competition. They offer free registration if your team is all female. So you really start seeing efforts on a larger scale trying to pull in some of these groups that aren't represented or that are underrepresented. The flip side of that is I think that you're starting to see a cultural shift where computers and video games are no longer strictly boys' toys, and where you're starting to see some of this interest spread throughout different demographics.
We have to take a break. We're speaking with Laura Bate, a senior program associate with the Cybersecurity Initiative at New America. I'm your host, Jason Miller. You're listening to Inside of the Month on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Hear that? That's the sound of a computer on the internet. But is it someone booking their vacation? Or is it an enemy plotting a cyber attack? Battelle is helping our government with cybersecurity so that we stay one step ahead of those who would do us harm, enhancing cyber intelligence. With Battelle, it can be done. Learn more at battelle.org/cyber.
Welcome back to Inside of the Month on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today we're speaking with Laura Bate, a senior program associate with the Cybersecurity Initiative at New America. Let's move back to the federal world for a second, because one of the things that the National Institute of Standards and Technology is doing is this educational program, the NICE program, cyber training. Talk a little bit about the NICE program from your perspective. What are you seeing that's good? What are you seeing that they could still work on?
Sure. The National Institute on Cybersecurity Education, the National Initiative on Cybersecurity Education is doing some really great work. NICE, in my opinion, they're rock stars. but it's a small office with a big mandate. They're also coordinating training efforts more than actually conducting any of those training efforts. And in that process, they've created some really great tools. The CyberSeek website, personally, I find that very useful for tracking what jobs are available, where there's movement, and just in getting a sense of overall numbers of openings. Being able to have some kind of metric on the workforce like that is really, really useful. They've also created the cybersecurity framework, which has given a classification system for the knowledge, skills, and abilities required for different positions. And I've heard both from industry and from in government that that can be really, really useful. Not in all cases. Some people create their own. In some cases, it's not relevant. Some people have their own internal system. But by and large, having that classification is useful. They also have a request for information out right now from the cybersecurity community at large, asking what are the workforce issues. So for me as a researcher, being able to comb through all of this data that hopefully will come in as a response to that is going to be really useful.
It's interesting that the RFI is out. I saw that just recently. I didn't get a chance to read through it completely. What was your sense of the RFI? I mean, don't we know what the workforce issues are? Or is this kind of a, hey, it's time to catch up because it's been a while type of RFI?
Well, this is in response to the executive order that the president put out. So that being the what initiated this creates sort of a different urgency. We need to have these answers to write the report right away. That being said, I think that it's good to have sort of this democratic appeal out there. You don't necessarily always hear from actors to the same level. You might hear from the larger companies more often than the smaller companies. You might hear from the federal government more often than the state governments. So being able to get a broad spread of response is really quite useful.
And I think, as you said, the executive order from President Donald Trump has a lot of reports. I think there's something like 18 or 19 reports or something to that effect. And I know this is one of them. Do you think that this type of report will then lead to what? Like what in your world, what would be a good end result? New hiring initiatives, new understanding of where the gaps are, and maybe the universities and colleges and high schools can start tailoring educational programs toward those gaps. Which if you had a crystal ball type of thing, or if you could be queen for the day?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. If I could be queen for the day, let me tell you. But I think that on two levels, this makes a lot of sense. One is just to sort of get a state of play of the entire organization. And that's actually surprisingly not really well represented anywhere. There are a lot of things that are known anecdotally that we don't have good data on. The cybersecurity workforce isn't as well documented as you'd want it to be able to study some of these things. So being able to get that big picture sense really is quite valuable. A report doesn't sound like it's all that moving and shaking, but it really can be a useful tool for people who are studying this.
I know NSA has made agreements and they have relationships with universities. They've had, and then you're starting to see that through Homeland Security Department the same way to say, for instance, how can we partner with you to improve education? Is that the next step here? I mean, is this really the partnership between government and academia is really how to get this workforce challenge really solved?
That's part of it. But one key point that I really want to emphasize is there is no one particular path to solving the workforce problem. Academia, the university system, it's a huge player. And we've seen some really good, really creative ideas coming out of academia, ways that universities have been branching out either in their coursework or in their access to extracurricular programs, even just tapping into DC in general and seeing what the policy community is doing. But there are a lot of other roads out there. At New America, we are home to the Center on Education and Skills. And so we've been able to talk about apprenticeship programs a lot, something you tend to think of in the context of the construction trades, but also is a really good fit for cybersecurity. The work-based learning component of it in conjunction with the classroom learning means that people who are coming out of those programs have the experience with the tools and have demonstrated knowledge that the employers know exactly what they're going to get.
The apprenticeship is a great idea in many ways. I have a very good friend who's into the IT world, and he'll tell you from a coder perspective, going to college to learn to be a coder versus maybe going for just a short couple of years, like get your AA degree and then jumping into the workforce, you may be better off doing that because the real-world experience is so important. Is that why the apprenticeship program is so appealing to you guys, is that real-world experience?
That's part of it. Another part of it is that there's a big credentialing problem in identifying, if you're the HR department at a major company or in the federal government, how do you determine, just as your first filter, who you want to bring in? Is that people with a bachelor's degree? Is it people with industry certifications? What exactly is it that designates that this is someone who's qualified, even at a baseline level, for this position? And with those apprenticeship programs, you know, you've been part of designing the coursework, so you know exactly what they've been taught, and you know exactly what tools they're used to using. They're familiar with your organization, your operation, and your context, so your sector, what it is that you need to worry about. So the trainees that are coming out really have a solid education.
So when we talk about apprenticeship, it's like, and we'll just pick on Microsoft or Google as, mm-hmm. because they're easy to pick on. They would be the ones who would do the apprenticeship, saying we need cybersecurity people in this area. We're going to bring in 30 people and train them for a year program. And then after that year, they'll have jobs. Is that type of program that you could envision?
That's part of it. But actually, there's an enormous amount of flexibility in how this works. So an employer, a group of employers, for example, a regional grouping of employers, could get together, work with the local community college, set up their program, set up their curriculum, and then end up registering that with the Department of Labor, either in their state or with the federal Department of Labor. And then they go forth with whatever they need to do. So it can happen either from a single company, it can come out of a community college, it can come out of a university, it can come out of a group of different organizations. With the federal government, you have an opportunity to really pull in a bunch of different sectors as well.
Do you get a sense of that, this idea starting to grow a little bit? Are you starting to see some pilot programs, proof of concepts anywhere yet?
There are about a half a dozen that I'm tracking that are either emerging, starting to roll, one or two that I can think of that actually have students that are starting to graduate.
And then I know, for instance, in the federal government world, let's switch back to our really focus, mm-hmm. they've had the scholarship for service type of program, yeah. where we will give you a scholarship, but in exchange, you come in and work for X amount of years, 2, 3, 4 years. That's not an apprenticeship program, but it has a similar tone where we're going to make sure you get trained. We're going to make sure you get the education that we deem important because we're going to pay for it. And then in return, we're going to get this really smart, hopefully, person who comes in. Is that part of this kind of broader way to get more people interested and more people into the cyber field?
Absolutely. When I say that there are a number of paths into the field, that's one of them. And that's exactly the kind of example that I mean, that you have different ways to bring people in. That's a little different than the apprenticeship programs because they aren't necessarily coming in with that on-the-job experience, but it's still one of the critical ways that you can get people interested, that you can start reaching out to populations that maybe otherwise wouldn't have gotten those degrees or wouldn't have come into this field. So it's still a really important component.
We have to take a break. We're speaking with Laura Bate, a senior program associate with the Cybersecurity Initiative at New America. I'm your host, Jason Miller. You're listening to Inside of the Month on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
That's not a heart attack. It's a cyber attack on a pacemaker, which could threaten the patient's life. But the attack fails because the cybersecurity experts at Battelle create a device secure to keep patients safe. Stopping cyber attacks on connected medical devices. With Battelle, it can be done. Learn more at battelle.org/device-secure.
Welcome back to Inside of the Month on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, we're speaking with Laura Bate, a senior program associate with the Cybersecurity Initiative at New America. What are you seeing, generally speaking, in terms of other responses from academia, in terms of how to make sure that they're training the right people, that the pipeline is filled with qualified cyber experts? Because there's also, just to add to this, there's also the push for data. We need more data scientists, right? We need people who understand data, and they can be cyber people, but they may not be.
I think one of the things that we're seeing is the understanding that there needs to be a larger context given to a lot of these students. They can't come out with just a computer science degree and understand, for example, the geopolitical significance of what's going on. When you start looking at, for example, we tend to think of this in terms of technical background, but you can also think of cybersecurity jobs in terms of the larger context they deal with. For example, international relations students also really need to understand this stuff. So we're seeing the universities start to build very slowly start to build some of that expertise into different programs across the university. So it's not just the impact on the computer science programs, it's the impact across the university. That's where you're starting to see some of the real creativity.
Sounds like you're saying we need to have well-rounded people.
I know, shocking that, conclusion,
I think
isn't it?
We've heard that before. Back in my day, now I feel like the old man. Back in my day, we need well-rounded people. Give me a sense of from the government's perspective as well, what can they do differently? Are you doing some research, some study in terms of specifically what the federal government or state, local, tribal governments can do to recruit those people, the important cyber skills?
Yeah, I can't put enough emphasis on making sure educational options are available to people coming in. That's one of the best ways to draw people in. It's one of the best ways to retain them. It's one of the best ways to ensure that you have a cutting-edge workforce, particularly when you have a large organization where you can rotate them around different offices, for example. You have different pools of expertise. You can really expand your employees' understanding of the field as a whole, and that really can do a lot, both to improve the workforce and to keep them with you.
And going forward, as you see this problem, it's not going to decrease anytime soon. It's not like there's going to be a glut of cyber workforce and then we're going to have too many, like we have too many lawyers, for example. You may be a lawyer and I apologize if that's the case. But where do you see this going? What, you know, or if we have this conversation again in 3 or 5 years, are we going to have the same discussion or is it going to be better, do you think?
We are definitely going to have the same discussion. Whether or not it's better, I think depends on how much time we actually spend genuinely thinking about solutions, not politicizing them, but genuinely trying to think creatively about what the options are in front of us. I think part of it also depends on how creative we are. Do we press forward saying we are going to do the same things we're doing now, we're just going to do more of them? Or are we going to think more broadly about the options out there?
Do you have hope? Do you think that there is a light at the end of the tunnel from a cybersecurity? Or are we still, again, 3 to 5 years away from even getting toward that light because of just the dearth of skill sets and the need for those skill sets?
I think there is hope. I think that there's also a lot of job security for people who do have that training.
And at the same time, what we see in the federal market is people with certain skill sets can easily job hop, meaning the pay is nice, but they go back and look at the mission. It's the same thing I've heard time and again with people with high-level security clearances. The pay is all about the same. They start looking at the mission and what do I want to do? Is that the other key piece here? Is that as federal agencies look to hire, they have to present it in a way that, hey, we have this really cool mission and we can attract you because you're going to get to do this cool thing versus, hey, there's these blinking lights over here. Make sure that they don't stop blinking. And there's a difference.
Yeah, the sales pitch on that matters. But there needs to be truth in advertising if you're going to keep people.
We hope so, right? You don't want somebody to go in and 2 weeks into their job go, all I do is look at blinking lights. From a private sector perspective, are you seeing any real difference between how the private sector is handling this need for skills and how the public sector is handling it?
Less than you would think. We tend to talk about the private sector in the context of being able to pay big money and attracting top talent. And that's true for a handful of really large cybersecurity companies. There are also an awful lot of small businesses that have the same needs or that have important troves of data that may have millions of records, but don't have the expertise to protect them. And so figuring out how to handle the hiring for those organizations that don't have that kind of budget, actually, those conversations start looking kind of similar.
That's all the time we have for this week's episode. I'd like to thank my guest, Laura Bate, a senior program associate with the Cybersecurity Initiative at New America. I've been your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Insight of the Month on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights Cyber Workforce Training, sponsored by Battelle on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Cyber Training.